track session number 17349, Reel 5.
Mr. Bridge, Reel 5.
One of these men was on his hands and knees with his head between his hands on the floor, completely covered in fine dust and hatless. So I pulled him back by his hair to stretch him out so, you know, we could pick him up and throw him on top. Made a fearful groaning noise, which I thought he was probably still a sign of life, but apparently it just the way he'd been in that position, then the gases, you know, made the noise. And as far as I can recall, the bodies were just thrown on the top. And then later, bags of lime came up with the Korean porters, and we'd go out when it got dark and practically cover them with lime, but with the help, I don't know, but there was a fearful stench on hook from the time we got there until we left, and had probably been there ever since. That had been a vulnerable position.
How would they have been killed? By shellfire?
Probably by shellfire, by our, either by our airbursts or by their own artillery.
Did you take their weapons and so on off them?
Yeah, they're all taken.
Were there any prisoners?
None.
This must have been close to the armistice then.
Pardon me. I forget when the armistice was in July, I believe.
So this was only a few weeks before that?
Pardon?
Only a few weeks later?
Yeah.
What happened to you in the intervening weeks up to the armistice?
Well, they moved us off because they thought we'd our company had taken its fair share. So we moved just across the short valley onto another position where we could give covering fire to the hook. Then our D company went on. And we were probably 200-300 yards away, in line with the hook, but not as high. And two nights later, our D company, they really got mauled. They come under the same treatment as us, but the Chinese got into the position. And us being the nearest available company went immediately into a counterattack up the hook. And then I think we got so far, and then because of the artillery fire, we had to dig in where we were and more or less leave our D company to it, which they did, and either the Chinese withdrew or they were beaten off. And then I remember two more battalions came into the area, Royal Fusiliers, I think, and the King's Liverpool Regiment, who then took over from all of us, and we were shipped out.
But were you in the counterattack yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you describe the counterattack?
Well, as we all got kitted up, moved down off our position, down a communication trench which connected directly to the hook, and we got along this to the base of the hook, and the artillery fire came down, as I said, so heavy, so we couldn't make any progress. Plus, visibility was down to zero again, so we could have been shot by our own troops on on the hook. So we were ordered to stay where we were and dig in, get what cover we could. And there we were, until dawn, which wasn't quite so, it didn't seem that long to me anyway. But we still had several casualties, you know, from the incoming shell fire.
Any other memories of Korea before you left?
Well, as I said, we were all, our whole battalion was pulled away from the Hook area, and we went into Divisional Reserve, where we'd all lost equipment and everything there, weapons and everything. I remember I had my stun gun had jammed with a bullet in the barrel, and I tried to cock it and fire another round, but it went off and that also jammed. So we all got new weapons and everything. 2 or 3 days later, they, because we'd been up there the longest of our battalion, we went up as a salvage company to reclaim lost equipment, rifles, you know, Brens. And so we just went up there one night, hunted around to bury some of the Chinese and bring them down, and not bring them down, put lime and bring down bodies of men from D Company who were still up there. And that was about it.
How did you like doing that job?
That wasn't very popular at all, I can tell you. We just didn't like the place. As I said, as you got within a mile of it, you could smell, you know, the smell of corpses and everything up there. And plus, we thought we might get involved in another attack because, I tell you, things were hotting up. I forget who was on there at the time. Must have been the kings or the royal fusiliers who had come up to relieve us, but definitely one of our, a British battalion. I say we were doing what we were supposed to do, picking up stuff, and then some shell fire come in, and we took what cover we could, and then whoever was in charge of the company at the time, I think our company commander had been a casualty. So whether we had a lieutenant in charge, I don't know, but he called it off and we moved down again before daylight.
Did you see anything of the armistice?
Well, after we'd been in Div Reserve and we got reinforcements, we then moved on to part of the line where we had originally been, and we were there until the armistice came in. Where there were several skirmishes on this particular part of the line as well.
What did they amount to?
Well, I think I don't think there was any attack which came in at all on that part of the line, but there was plenty of patrol activity where patrols had clashed, and towards running up to the last week of the war, things really went down, but we're still under intermittent shell fire and mortar fire.
Is this the Samichon Valley or Rotation Ridge?
Samichon.
What happened on Armistice Day?
I think it was called 10 a.m. And we'd been warned that it's possible that it could be an armistice that day at 10 o'clock, which we all thought, oh yeah, we've heard it all before. Because there'd been so many times when, oh yeah, peace will be, or ceasefire will be done next week, and then that was the week after. And anyway, they said it's definitely on 10 o'clock this morning. And for some reason, we were stood too in the trenches. And came 10 o'clock, dead quiet. And then from our rear, I could hear a lot of artillery fire. And I thought, well, I might have known it was just a ruse or something. And hear all these shells coming over. It seemed like, well, there probably was hundreds of them. And they all burst above No Man's Land. Red, white and blue. And it's quite impressive. And then a short while later, when it came through that a definite ceasefire, some of the men left the trenches, crossed No Man's Land into the Chinese position, where they were totally out of order to do so, and they were severely reprimanded. I mean, they just wanted to go and see what it was like on the Chinese side and meet the Chinese for some reason. And I'll tell you, I don't know whether any court-martials come out of it, but it was, well, to me it wasn't the thing to do, and apparently the colonel and the company commanders didn't agree either about it.
Did they say what had happened? Did they say what had happened when they went into the Chinese trenches?
No, they just said the Chinese come out and greet them, but apparently the Chinese had been programmed for this because they said they were all smart and looked clean, whereas our men were still in a filthy combat fatigues, and there wasn't much, well, because of the language difficulty, but whether they were, somebody was sent after them to bring them back, I don't know, but
about how many went?
Oh, not many, about a dozen, maybe.
Out of the battalion?
Out of our company.
Out of 100 men?
Mm. I think they were led by a corporal who, he was the company cook corporal, and he was an old soldier, if you know what I mean.
How do you mean?
Well, he was the cook, the company cook. He never done patrols, or he was just company cook. Got a full night's sleep every night, and probably the best of the food, as they do, but I said he was an old soldier who was, had been in during the war, so.
Did any of the Chinese cross into your trenches?
No.
What do you feel about the necessity for fighting the Korean War? Do you feel it was necessary?
I would say it was necessary, but it didn't come to anything. If it hadn't been fought, then all of Korea would be communist now. And whether the whole country will ever become all communist or all free, I don't think anybody knows that.
What do you think about Korea today as compared with what you saw?
Well, they've captured a hell of a lot of commercial market. I mean, cars and everything. I mean, they've come on in the last, 20 years faster than, I think, than Japan did. Very commercial now. Going back to Christmas 52, whether it was New Year's Day, I can't recall, but it was very close around that area. For some reason, we'd had no rations whatsoever that day. And towards evening, I was section corporal. So I got fed up with the men complaining, say, look, we've had nothing. I said, well, no, none of the other platoons have either. Apparently, transport can't move because it's so cold, everything is frozen solid. And anyway, I went round to the company command post to see Sergeant Major. So travelling through the communication trenches, I mean, company command post wasn't that far away, probably 300-400 yards, or probably less than that. So I get to the command post, pull aside the blanket and go in. There were the three platoon sergeants and the sergeant major huddled round a little brazier thrown out enough heat, about the strength of half a dozen candles, I think, although we had none whatsoever. And I told them, they said, well, we can't do anything because there's no transport moving. We can't get anything up. And, of course, we hold nothing in reserve. And I thought, surely something you can give us. So the blokes had just about had enough. So Sergeant Major reached behind him and brought out this gallon jug, rum jug. And he said, well, look, he said, there's a tartan here for your blokes. They're probably, I don't know, about a pint in it, I should imagine, by the way it was sloshing around. He said, take that to him. And one platoon sergeant was actually in tears in the corner. And anyway, I took this. I got 3 yards past, and I thought, well, I'll have a swig because it's so cold. And I thought, I'll have a swig before I take it back. And I took a swig of this neat army issue rum. And God, it soon took effect. Because then it's probably about 20 below. It was so, absolutely so cold. And got a bit further and I thought, well, I'll have another swig. I eventually got most of it back to the boats and I said, there's no grub. I said, you got to wait until tomorrow. And I said, but give us your mug. See, I said, I managed to get a drop of rum off them. So I gave them a fair share. Each in the mugs, went round to the rest of the men in our section. There was only about 11 of us. Time I come up to the other corporal, we finished it off, but God, it hit me like a ton of bricks, I'll tell you. But at least they had a drink. The following day, call come round, go and get your rations, what have come up. And what it was, they gave me a few pieces of steak and a small bag of potatoes. They said that's the ration. Raw steak, we had nothing to cook it on even. And the potatoes were frozen hard. You couldn't peel them. Impossible to peel. Plus we had no heating. So we got as many candles as we could, put them all together, put a mess tin on top, and then heated up the meat best we could, sheared it out. I was last to get mine. As I went to get it, the mess tin fell off, and mine fell into all the grubby bits on the floor. All I just wiped it on my trousers and ate it, but the potatoes we couldn't do anything with at all. Eggs used to come up so hard when we got them, they were as if they were made of rock.
Why was this platoon sergeant crying?
I don't know. I should think... I think he was a married man, and with a absolute freezing condition and absolute nothing, if you know what I mean. Even the Chinese were quiet. You could hear... You could have been there on your own, because there was no contact for more than a week. But we still had to go on listening patrol. And I've been out there, and it's been so quiet and still, not a breath of wind, but the cold was so intense. All the barbed wire, you could hear it from miles away. As it contracted in the cold, it would close up and you'd hear tink, 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 magnified 1,000 times. And it would come along like a vehicle. And it'd come right up past you, where it'd go into a crescendo and then fade away again, tinkling away. You know, it was really weird. I wish there was some way I could have recorded that. But, as I say, there are so many instances which only come to you on a certain occasion when you think, oh, crumbs, I remember that now. On another occasion on that Samichon Valley, I'd been out on standing patrol and I was the last corporal to go out. And the sun used to come up behind us. Well, the valley at that time of the year would be heavy with mist. And as the sun cleared the mountains several miles behind, it instantly come up and hit the valley, and the mist wouldn't flow. It would disappear instantly. So what? And if the Chinese saw you going back up to your position, they'd send you a few mortar bombs. Anyway, I came up. I thought, well, the sun will be over the top in a minute. It's then probably 5 a.m. So I said, right, to the blokes, come on, we're going in now. As I jumped in the trench, walked around the sergeant came around, he said, your watch. He said, two OC of the company, who was the captain, was on his way around, you know. I'd just seen him done. So I said, well, we're in now. I said, and that's it. So I went to my dugout and started to get ready to have a wash. Round come the sergeant. He said, Captain Evans is playing up hell. He said he wants to... He called up the patrol because down on this position we had a telephone, field telephone. And he said he's called and he's got no reply. I said, well, didn't you tell him I was in? He said, no, he was in such a rage. He said, you better come and explain to him. So I went, put my gear on again and went round. He said, what are you doing leaving the listening patrol area? He said, can't you see all the fog out there? I said, well, it's mist. I said, and it'll clear in about 3 minutes. It varies from time to time, but I said, in about 3 minutes, that'll be as clear as a bell. And I said, you don't get any warning. It just, 1 minute's there and next, it just gone in seconds. Get down there with your patrol now. I said, well, it's pointless. Anyway, don't argue with me. Get them and get down there. So I go and collect the three men up again. Go down about 25 yards down from the trench was a bit of an overhang. So I said, you three wait here. I'll go down to the phone. So I went down about another 100, 150 yards to the phone. Called up. I said, I forget the code word for patrol. Say, 10 red O in position. And, all right, make sure you keep there until the valley is clear. So I was there about another four or five minutes. And as I told him, I said, the mist just went poof, gone. And I called out to the three men I'd left further behind. I said, Right, I said, make a dash now for the trench. So off they go. Minute I knew they'd come into sight of the Chinese, because the Chinese would be watching all the time, I heard dunk, 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 their mortars firing. And I say, because they only had 25 yards to go, they all got into the trench before the mortars hit. As three or four bombs come down, they were just spread about. Luckily, no one was hit. Then I thought, I've got about 150, 175 yards to go up fairly steep uphill. I wonder if I'll get. So I put the phone down, you know, disconnected and everything, because we used to leave it on this position. And then I thought, well, I'll probably get 20 yards uphill before they see me, because they probably thought, well, they've gone in and there's no more. But off I started, going as fast as I could, and I hadn't gotten more than 25 yards. I heard the Chinese mortars firing, and because I'd been in the mortar platoon also, I knew roughly the time, excuse me, a mortar bomb had taken flight from where they were. So anyway, I just got to the lip of the trench when the first one hit, not far behind me. I just dived in head first, and the rest of them just spread themselves along the edge of the trench, one or two over and one or two short. But that was the first time I've ever seen our second in command of the company anywhere in the trenches, in the forward sections. First time I'd ever seen him. I only ever saw the colonel once. And on one occasion, on the hook, when the brigadier came up, and when he saw the conditions we're in, he said, I overheard him say, I've never known anything like this since the First World War. So whether he was a young subaltern in the First World War, he could have been, of course, in the 50s. But he just said, whether he said, there's been nothing like this since the First World War, or I can't recall anything like this, but that's actually what he said.
We both saw this television program yesterday about the National Service in the 50s, and there was one man who was in Korea, I don't know if you remember him, saying that he was taking pot shots at civilians because he didn't care, he said. Do you remember him?
Yes, but...
Do you remember anything like that?
It was... I never saw a civilian within 10, 15 miles of the front line.
Did you ever hear of anybody taking pot shots at civilians?
No. Unless they were there before the war settled down to a static line. I mean, whether that could have... He could have been there when it was still a semi-mobile war, but there were no civilians, certainly not on the Chinese side.